Happy Saturday. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. It's March 14th. Yesterday was Friday the 13th. And you know, kind of a fitting ending date and day for a really weird week out there. I'll tell you a little story about me and the rather amazing 4 to 6 weeks I've had, but I'll save that for someplace opportune during the course of the show. Can you say truck wreck? Can you say water pipe break? Can you say contractors in mess? Can you say so far behind I can't see one end of me from the other? Stay tuned. Today, we are going to talk about, as always, stuff that nobody else is talking about because everybody's diverted. You know, we're diverted by the really unfortunate shootings of those two police officers in Ferguson and by the the complete lack. You know, the president and Holder together made more than 70 public comments almost immediately, I might add, about Michael Brown, thief and thug, who tried to kill a cop. You know, that's what you do when you try and take a cop's gun. You're probably not taking it to throw it into the street. And there's been nothing out of Holder. And there's been one tweet, you know, on Twitter about the two poor cops getting shot in Ferguson in a situation that Holder and Obama incited on purpose, just like Hillary Clinton incites the women thing on purpose to split and divide and to bring people to the polls with a incorrect and trumped up, purposely fanned, absolutely false sense of outrage. And one of the things we're going to go into today, I'll give you a little precursor here of all of it, is how they're doing the same thing in Israel. And by they, I don't mean the Israelis, I mean the Obama administration. And we're going to let that tie into my shows. I'm going to put the link up again for you on the fact that Valerie Jarrett, born in Tehran, Iran, and the most powerful woman in the United States, because Barry doesn't do anything without Valerie's blessing, and Barack Obama and their Muslim White House. I'm going to give you a list of names and the positions in the government and the White House today. I've given you names before. These are new ones who are Muslims at the highest ends of our government. How they are, shall we say, playing Israel. Their personal dislike of Netanyahu, but their fear of Netanyahu launching a strike against Iran. How they are playing this in the most sordid of fashions, using your tax dollars in the upcoming Israeli elections. And I'm going to explain to you what nobody else has explained to you about how the Israeli government works and why their plan may succeed, even if Netanyahu's party, the Likud party, gets the most votes. It is diabolically clever. And anybody who really looks at this, who thinks that this guy is incompetent and not brilliant, although dark, evil, anti-American, is absolutely crazy. You libs out there who are listening to the show are going, you're pursing your lips and going, how dare he call us crazy? Well, you know what? Anybody who says 2 + 2 = 5 is crazy. Unless you happen to be a government character, Big Brother character in 1984 or today. The other thing we're going to talk about today, although that is probably one of the most critical, we're going to talk about what's really going on with this economy of ours. You know, all the pomp and nonsense. We're going to cast that to the side. I'm going to bring you up to speed on what's happening here, what's happening in Europe, which will blow your mind. How would you like to be paid by your mortgage lender for having your mortgage? I'm not making that up. That's happening in Europe right now. People are getting checks from their mortgage lenders to have a mortgage. Wait to hear about this, because it could be coming here too. And we're going to talk about what the upside is of those negative interest rates and the downside as they come across the pond to us, which they're going to do, because everything is linked, folks. We're going to talk a little bit about right to work, because there's a lot of misunderstandings about right to work. The state of Wisconsin is about to become the 25th right to work state. That is a tsunami of right to work sweeping the country. And a lot of union people don't even understand it. So I'm going to explain it to you because it's very important. It's a key ingredient to whether or not our economy really covers or does not really recover. And by the way, it's also a key ingredient to undermining the Democratic power base, because that is a key constituency of theirs. 400 million in the last presidential election. Hey, unions, I think he just vetoed the Keystone Pipeline, which you supported. How much money are you going to give the Democrats this time, eh? And then we're going to talk a little bit about not Hillary's emails, because you've heard that, and you've heard her lame excuse and purposeful lies. I mean, do you see a pattern here? This purposeful lying, this disdain for American public opinion, this elitist attitude that you don't have a living brain cell and therefore any crap they feed you, you'll digest, smile, and go on your way to the football game. It is a pattern, and it is the Democratic Party. And that's not to say there aren't some Republicans that don't do the same damn thing. We're going to talk a little bit about Iran and my opinion of the letter that the 47 Republican senators sent to Iran. Might be a slightly different twist than you've heard before. And we are going to talk about what this email thing really means. I mean, what is this email thing with Hillary? Yeah, we know this. We know she had the server. We know for damn sure she had classified documents. I mean, how can you conduct all your business through an email address as a Secretary of State and not deal with a classified document? Huh? Hello? I mean, either you were not in attendance, maybe that's what happened in Benghazi, or you're lying. One or the other. Both are pretty bad. Who's going to answer that 3 o'clock in the morning call, huh, Hillary? Going to respond to it with an email from your private server? And last, we're going to talk just a little bit about immigration, which, by the way, other than the nuclear bomb in Iran's hands, is the single greatest peril facing this nation. It is the domestic nuclear device. And it's on purpose, folks, just like everything else is. So first of all, let's start off with the Israeli elections. Because, you know, if Netanyahu does not retain power, guess what? The goal of Valerie Jarrett, Barack Obama, and their minions, including their Muslim minions in the White House, and I'm going to give you the names here shortly, they're going to be successful in removing the only real threat, since our Congress can't get anything done, the only real threat to Iran achieving nuclear power status, and that is the Israeli military. Because the folks who would otherwise control the government if Netanyahu does not, do not have the hawkish stance of Netanyahu. In fact, some of them are downright scary. So, there is a party. There were a bunch of fraction parties. Arab Israelis, which, by the way, Arab Israelis are 20% of the Israeli population. A fact very few people know. Huge percentage. In previous elections, only about 54% of them have turned out to vote, because they don't think they have a say. However, roughly a 65.7% of them in recent poll are planning to vote in this election. And that's because all the fractured parties of both the Communist Party in Israel, the Socialist Party in Israel, and the Arab parties in Israel have been brought together in one party called the Joint List. Now, who do you think did that? Let me give you three guesses. Our community organizer in chief did that. And he did it using your tax dollars. Not only that, but some of his top campaign operatives are over there right now making sure that the Arab Israelis and the communist Israelis are whipped into a frenzy. Gee, does this sound like Ferguson? Are whipped into a frenzy so that they come out to the polls. And if they come out in the polls that is projected, that same poll said that 80% of them are going to vote for the Joint List candidates, which include the Communist Hadash Party, the Socialist Balad Party, who, by the way, opposes Israel as a Jewish state and favors a single-nation solution for Israel's and Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, Israel, etc. By the way, Balad Party member, and he's in the Knesset. The Knesset is our Congress. He's in the Knesset. His name is Hanan Zoabi. And if I don't pronounce that right, my apologies. He sailed with a 2010 Gaza flotilla. Remember when the Palestinians tried to break the Israeli blockade of arms? And has expressed sympathy with the terrorists who kidnapped and killed the three Israeli teenagers, if you remember that last summer. His chief spokesman, a gentleman by the name of Raja Ziatra, compared the Islamic State, their atrocities, to the 1948 establishment of the State of Israel. They also assert Hamas is not a terrorist group. This is the coalition that Obama and his operatives have formed to try and oust Netanyahu. It gets worse. To have full control over the Knesset, you need 61 seats. And whatever party, the leading party, in this case the Likud party, Netanyahu's party, whatever party controls 61 seats because they've put it together with a coalition of other parties, that is the prime minister, i.e. right now, Netanyahu. However, the way this is shaping up, the Likud party is probably only going to win between 24 and 27 seats, which, by the way, is slightly better than they did last time, but that's not the problem. The problem is who's going to win the rest of the seats. So, in Netanyahu's government's terms, there is, I quote, an unprecedented international, spell that Obama America, effort to unseat Netanyahu. One cornerstone of that effort was to increase Arab voter turnout, unquote. Here's a little dot for you. In December, the White House honored a group dedicated to increasing the Israeli Arab voter turnout. A famous sculptor was asked, her name is Javat Haviva, was asked to create one of four Hanukkah memoirs to be displayed at the annual White House Hanukkah reception. She happens to be part of the Israeli Arab coalition. So, the Washington Free Beacon, they reported a month ago, lost in the shuffle of all the distraction, that Gavat Haviva, which, by the way, is also the name of a group, a supposedly artistic international group, The Gavat Haviva was funded by the State Department. Let me repeat that. The Gavat Haviva, who was at the December deal at the White House to increase Arab and Israeli voter turnout in an election in which Obama operatives are on the ground in Israel, I'll give you their names here in a second, stirring up that vote and advising the joint list, the coalition which they have now formed of the communists, the socialists, and the Islamists. Our State Department funded that group. Can you spell John Kerry and Barack Obama? Never mind that that's absolutely illegal, because we know Barry doesn't care about that, and neither does Kerry. And absolutely, it's tortious interference in the international affairs of an ally, a big no-no, but we know Barry doesn't care about that either. In fact, Barry only cares about interference in the affairs of enemies. Let me continue here. I hope you're getting kind of the picture. You know, these dots aren't very hard to connect. There is another group that's trying to get the Arab and left-wing voter turnout, and that's called V15, or Victory 15, dedicated to unseating Netanyahu. That is the group that got money from Gavat Haviva. And that is the group that hired Obama campaign strategist Jeremy Byrd, who took care of the voter turnout and the coalition of all sorts of folks. Kind of the same coalition here in the United States. But in the United States, the blacks, gee, remember Ferguson stirring up all the black folks, convincing them that the Democrats have their backs based on lies. So Jeremy Byrd is over there whipping up the vote, coalescing the opposition, which just happens to be communists, leftists, and Islamists. And it is a possibility that the joint list collectively could get 10 to 14 seats in this election. That means that Netanyahu, if his Likud party gets 24 to 27 seats, will have to form an alliance with someone to get to 61 seats for Netanyahu to remain in control of the government. Now, the several other moderate parties who might come in at, there's one right behind the Likud, might come in at 20 to 22. That still leaves them, 10 to 14 seats short from the 61 seats needed to form a government. Do you realize that communists, Islamists, and socialists, coached and funded by the Obamas and Kerry, using our money without our knowledge, illegally, could create that block of votes through the joint list, which would allow someone to form a government? And what do you think they're going to ask for in return? Do you want to bet it's a pledge to never attack Iran? Because Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama want Iran to have the bomb. Listen to my previous shows. Everything he tells you is a lie about that. It is a bald-faced, flat lie. The other Arab countries know it. Israel knows it. And they rely on what they consider to be the stupidity of the American public not to know it. Well, look, I did another show. I think we'll put that link up for you, too. This was in the last several months, about the budding coziness, the liaison, the alliance between the ultra-left and radical Islam. Now, if you don't think that this facts on the ground, boots on the ground, your money at work, if you don't think that this isn't more proof of that, I don't know what it'll take. Forget what I say. Here's what the most respected press in Israel has to say. I quote, "These are very powerful organizations with foreign funding, equipped with strategists and advisors seeking two main objectives: to increase the voter turnout among the left and to increase the voter turnout among the Arabs. They are well-funded organizations that can get the Arab joint list up to 16 seats, thereby determining the overall result of the election." Think about that in terms of your family's safety. And the end-all, be-all, which was, if Israel had to, it would use tactical nuclear weapons to take out Iran's nuclear facilities, something I've been forecasting for a long time. That could effectively undermine that forever, which means Iran would have the unfettered access to and the means to deliver a nuclear warhead. Not a good thing. Now, let's go to the next big dot here. You know, in this government that you and I fund, all sorts of things happen which we don't hear about. About a week ago, he was being briefed, Barry, was being briefed by his top commanders, and he absolutely blew up. This is from an insider source. Screaming, not saying, screaming, "Don't you dare try and paint all of Islam with the same brush." He stomped out of the room. He came back into the room, said the same thing. Valerie Jarrett came in, said the same thing, and then took him back out of the room. And let me give you a little background here. In my previous shows, and I'm going to have the links of those up too, this is going back a year and a half, I warned you about the Muslims, including Muslims with direct affiliations with and memberships in the Muslim Brotherhood, kind of the grandfather of all terrorist groups, that the Egyptians kicked out of office. They were so bad. And you should listen to that. But here's some more names for you now. John Brennan, who's the current head of the CIA, did you know he converted to Islam while he was stationed in Saudi Arabia? Gee, you don't hear that in the mainstream press, do you? Obama's top advisor, none other than Miss Valerie Jarrett, born in Tehran, Iran, is a Muslim. You don't hear that in the press, do you? Hillary Clinton's top advisor, Huma Abedin, who's now involved in the thick of this email scandal, one can only wonder why, is a Muslim. Her mother and her brother are involved as active members in the Muslim Brotherhood. Assistant Secretary for Policy Development for Homeland Security. These are the guys who keep us safe, supposedly. Arif Akhan, that's A-I-K-H-A-N, is a Muslim. Homeland Security Advisor Mohammed Ilibary, that's E-L-I-B-I-A-R-Y, is a Muslim. Obama's advisor and founder of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, Salam al-Mariette, is a Muslim. Obama's Sharia czar, did you even know he had a Sharia czar? Yes, he does. Imam, oh yes, an imam. Imam Mohammed Magid of the Islamic Society of North America is a Muslim. His advisory council, it's unbelievable, isn't it? His advisory council on faith-based neighborhood partnerships. You know, there are a lot of faiths in the United States, mostly Christian, secondarily Jewish, tertiary, quadriary, whatever the term is, other faiths like Islam. His head of the Advisory Council on Faith-Based Neighborhood Partnerships, Ibu Patel, is a Muslim. And last but not least, of course, we have the President of the United States. So, in case you didn't know this, when CIA Director Brennan, who converted to Islam when he was in Saudi Arabia, when he took his oath, he did not take his oath on the Bible. He took his oath on a copy of the Constitution. When Congressman Keith Ellison, a Muslim, took his oath, he did not take his oath on the Bible. He took it on a copy of the Quran. And et cetera, et cetera. There's also some question over which book was present when Barack Obama took his oath, and whether or not he took the oath twice, since the oath was misstated in the original rendering. I'm not going to get into those weeds. It's irrelevant. I'm not going to question John Brennan either. But what I just gave you is a fact. I have a lot of questions about Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and the rest of the minions. You've heard them. And you can listen to them again on these shows that are posted down below in the write-up. Anyway, the Muslim faith constitutes pretty far south, less than 1% of all of America. I don't think he has that many Jewish advisors in high posts. And Jews are anywhere from 1.5% to 2.5% of the population. Anyway, it is rather remarkable. Let's switch over to the economy, because all this stuff is tied in, unfortunately. So number one, we got an overhyped jobs report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics this morning. By the way, if you go and look at their own U6, you'll see that that does not correspond to their public reports. Look it up, Department of Labor Statistics, type in U6, see it for yourself. So they said that we had 295,000 new jobs for February, and that the employment rate fell from 5.7 to 5.5. Not so much, folks. What they didn't mention was the labor force participation rate. You've heard me talk about it before. Slipped to 62.8%. It is now lower than at any time since 1978. The workforce age 55 and over has grown 25% since the Great Recession began in 2007. But the workforce 16 to 54 is almost the same size. So, so much for the progressive excuse that everybody's aging and this is just a natural process. All right, well, you know, if you go to Shadow Government Statistics, they changed their name from shadowstats.com to shadowgovernmentstatistics.com. You should check it every week. I've told you many times. It includes all the people, their reports, that the government has kind of siphoned out of its reports over many years. So the real unemployment is 23.1%. In fact, it's been stuck above 21% since mid-2009. What does that coincide with? Oh, yes, Barack Obama becoming president. So there's a economic historian by the name of Robert Higgs, very well known. He writes, the U.S. economy, though not completely stagnant, has made little headway for more than 7 years. What does that correspond to? Oh, yeah, that's right, Barack Obama in office. By the way, Higgs wrote a book. You might want to pick it up sometime. It was way back in 1987. It's called Crisis and Leviathan. And in it, he talks about how every crisis, the government gears up, expands, and it's like a ratchet. Once you've ratcheted the ratchet, it never goes back. It's pretty interesting. Let me give you another quote from Higgs. Arguably the best single currently available measure of the entire public's payoff from economic activity is real disposable income per capita. This is the average amount per annum that Americans receive in exchange for the use of their labor and other input services after taxes, corrected for changes in the purchasing power of the dollar, i.e. inflation. As the chart below shows, and there's a chart that's posted down below, this measure of economic well-being has scarcely increased at all since 2007. Now, some of that was George Bush, but Georgie was out of office in 2008. The rest of this time has been the Democrats, until this year, and Barack Hussein Obama. Now, let's tie that in. In other words, an economy which is being touted as strong and which may well be the strongest in the world, only because the rest of the world is falling apart. You know, it's like being the one-legged runner in a field of runners with no legs. Kind of terrible analogy, I'm sure, but it gives you the visual picture. 1.2 trillion of euros, that's about $1.5 trillion, of European government bonds are now have negative yields. Do you know what that means? That means that 25% of all the national securities in Europe are now paying interest rather than receiving interest. It's absolutely unbelievable. If you go to take out a mortgage in Denmark right now, the bank will be paying you. If you take out a business loan, I'm taking Denmark. If you take out a business loan in Denmark, she was quoted an interest rate of minus 0.0172%. In other words, they are paying her 1.7% per year to borrow the money. You can't make this up. And if you're a depositor, a saver, which is, of course, where all the bank, quote-unquote, reserves come from to make these loans that are now costing them money, comes from to begin with, guess what? You pay the bank to hold your deposit. You don't get interest. Not even the lousy 0.5% or 1% we're getting over here. So let's think about this for a moment. While all this subterfuge is going on with Israel and Iran and the bomb and ISIS and all that kind of stuff, all of which, by the way, also has an economic impact. And should Iran ever get the bomb and use it, an economic and human impact beyond, you couldn't fathom it. So right now, we can withdraw our money or close our bank accounts, and we can pay for obligations with, you know, greenbacks, cash. And because of that, follow me on this. Because of that, how many people are going to leave money in banks, and the banks need the money to create the loans? In other words, that's the reserves. That's how it works. How many people are going to leave money in banks if they have to pay the bank to hold it? Riddle me that, bat dollar. So this is kind of a rabbit hole, right? And it's getting deeper by the day. And yes, it could come across the pond to us. So, some of you folks who have mortgages out there, if there's not a floor on them, you might have a chance to renegotiate in the future. And if there's no floor, who knows? You might be, it won't be a big check, but you'll be getting a check. Pretty interesting. Pretty scary. And I'm not done on this economy thing. China's economy is continuing to lose steam. Now, Europe, to try and stop deflation and try and spur, you know, just like the Fed did here, they printed tons of money, bought our own debt, etc., and it kind of held the line. You know, my poor, but I can't think of another analogy of the one-legged runner being faster than the runner with no legs. It held the line. Hold the line, boys. But over in Europe, it's not holding the line. So they continue to print more and more and more money. We've talked about what that means, right? Every euro you print, each euro is worth less. China's economy, and I've talked about this before, continues to lose steam. Industrial production, retail sales, fixed asset investment have all expanded at far weaker than expected rates in 2015. China, guess what? China is now starting its own economic stimulus program. That's right, printing money. Uh-oh, it's kind of becoming a worldwide endemic. Methinks the end will not be pretty. There's a great article, by the way, that Bill Bonner, who I think is very clever, knows his stuff. The End of the Great Debt Cycle. He touts, by the way, a new book. He didn't write it. A guy by the name of Richard Duncan did. By the name of The New Depression, The Breakdown of the Paper Money Economy. I have not read it. I've heard it's good. I'm throwing out the title there in case you want to check it out. So, what Bill writes, and he's kind of in the same camp as what we've been talking about. What Bill writes is, economists who still have their wits about them, if there are any left, are baffled. The lowest bond yields in history, and along comes a European Central Bank with a plan to drive them lower by the way of $1.2 trillion of quantitative easing, right? Printing money, buying your own debt. Just like the Fed did over here, just like China's kind of getting ready to do, just like Japan's been doing with terrible results. So his theory is that all the banks bought the debt of all these bankrupt European governments. And now the only thing that can bail them out is to print money to buy this debt back from them, which is really what this QE thing is all about. He may well be right. I don't pretend to be some economic wizard. I'm a poor old hayseed from Wyoming. But it kind of makes sense. You know, the dots connect. And what that means for all the people, and this goes back to what I was just talking about a few minutes ago, and that what that means for all the people who are savers, who are now not only faced with perhaps having to pay their bank to hold their money, but at some point these people are going to wake up and realize that their money in the bank, that they're paying the bank to hold, is the reserves that the bank is lending out at loans that lose money, that are being purchased by the printing of their currency, which is devaluing their currency, which is sitting in the bank. Think about that. Think about that circle just for a moment, because it takes some thought. It's pretty amazing. And that means people become more likely to pull their money out of the banks. Let me give you an example. Can you imagine how far your household would get if you lived on 57% of what you earn, the rest goes to your creditors, and you still spend more than your income? I don't think that'll last too long. That's what's happening over in Europe. And in a way, not quite to those extremes, what's happening here, what's happening perhaps at an even greater extreme in Japan, and what's about to start happening in China. On top of all this, businesses borrowed $3 trillion more in the last year than they had in any previous year. Now, think about that $3 trillion paying a negative interest rate. How long do you think the bank's going to last? How much money is going to have to be printed to bail the banks out under our little scenario? You know, and the money's gone into buybacks and mergers and acquisitions and bonuses. You know, that's wasted money. Fees. Spectacular payoffs to insiders. You know, everything I've been describing to you here does not benefit the 1%, folks. It benefits the 1/10 of 1%. The people who are behind, Barack Obama, the left wing, and yes, radical Islam, i.e. the Saudis, Kuwait, the Emirates, etc. They are the 0.1%, along with George Soros and other people like that. I did a show, I'm not going to put the link up, you guys can go back in the archives, on what's happening to the middle class. I think it was 3-4 weeks ago. This ought to bring it home. Let's switch our guns from a perplexing economic picture globally, Europe, China, Japan, United States, negative interest rates, etc., and what that portends possibly for the future, and Iran getting the bomb, and Obama's using your tax money to illegally interfere in Israeli elections, etc. And let's go to the Hillary emails. I'm not going to go into, like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, she had her own server. She deleted a bunch of emails that she admits. She's the only one who decides. Here's what you don't know. The stuff that went to the State Department, it was all printed paper, not emails. Now, as you know, if you type in a search word in emails, you can pull them all up if you're looking for this, that, or the other. You can't do that with printed paper. It takes 10 times longer to ferret through, i.e. a delay. This whole thing will blow over. Hopefully, Hillary hints. Number two, Hillary's attorney sorted the emails. Hillary's attorney used to work for Barack Obama. In fact, Podesta has now gone from Obama to Hillary. Podesta is the one who took over Cass Sunstein's job, the regulatory czar, and he's the guy who's come up with all these wonderful ideas about executive authority, executive actions, not calling a treaty, etc., etc., etc. He's now working for Hillary. And it gets worse, believe it or not. He and others, her other counsel, did a sort of the email, not by examining the emails, but simply by keywords. Now, we don't even know what the keywords were. Maybe the word government was left out. Maybe the word Saudi Arabia was left out. Maybe the word Clinton Foundation, which, to make things worse, has taken in $2 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars, and spent $2 billion, that's billion with a B. Not only are we on the surface aware that the money came in from folks who, why don't we be kind, say, don't have our best interests at heart, and who treat women like crap while she's talking about women's rights. Saudi Arabia, Qatar. Ah, there's Qatar again. Valerie Jarrett's favorite intermediary. Qatar, the Arab Emirates, you name it. But where did the Clintons, where did that $2 billion go? What favors and deals were made with that $2 billion of foreign money while she was Secretary of State? Highly illegal. And while she was hiding her emails, which she says had nothing to do with that, and just take my word for it. Because my attorneys did a keyword search. But, gee, we forget what the keywords were. Look, those are all tidbits you probably haven't heard. In fact, I'm quite sure you haven't heard anywhere else, which is my job to bring you. But what's more important is what this means, because there's a deeper and bigger picture than who gave the money and who got the money. That's bad enough. And as we know, the IRS spares no expense and wastes no time investigating churches and Tea Party groups run by grandmothers. But they can't seem to investigate this. Eric Holder, Barack Obama. So, who knows what the tie-in is to the White House? I guess maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll never find out. What's more important is that it's come to light that the State Department, while she was the Secretary of State, directed billions of dollars to certain governments who either did favors for people close to the Clintons thereafter, or, I imagine this, became contributors to the Clinton Foundation. Let me give you one example. Hillary's brother, Tony Rodham, right? It's Hillary Rodham Clinton, sat on the board of a self-described mining company in 2012, but, and by the way, like with no activity, that in 2012 received one of only two gold exploitation permits ever granted in Haiti. If you remember correctly, and by the way, they were the first ever issued in 50 years by Haiti, in addition, the first of anything like it ever issued in 50 years. This North Carolina company, VCS Mining, also included on its board Bill Clinton's co-chair of the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission, former Haitian Prime Minister Jean-Max Bellerive. I'm quoting now. VC's coveted gold mining exploitation permit was apparently such a sweetheart deal that it outraged the Haitian Senate, since royalties to be paid to the Haitian government were only 2.5%, a sum mining experts say is at least half of the standard rate. There was also millions of dollars of our tax money directed in aid to Haiti from the State Department while Hillary ran the show. So, it's kind of interesting, huh? What we see going on here, folks, is a dagger to the heart of the Republic. That's the big picture. It is crony capitalism, greed, corruption, theft, lies that strike at the very heart of our Republic, the Constitution, our laws, and our ability to have information so we can make proper decisions. That's the big picture here. It's way more than just emails and a server. It's way more, although very critical, than national security. It's way more than self-dealing with, as just one example, the Haitian government. And it's way more than taking money from Arab countries who treat women like crap while she has the gall to stand up there and say that women's rights is her primary issue. It's way more than that. It's a fundamental threat to your freedom. And it's the same thing Democrats do, and Barack Hussein Obama does, and Eric Holder does, and Nancy Pelosi does, and Harry Reid does, to name just a few, every single day. Speaking of the Democratic Party, you know where they get a lot of their money? The right to the unions. Yes, the unions. You know, the unions have the money because the government, particularly where run by Democrats, is forced by law to collect the monthly dues, no administrative cost to the unions, by the way, just to you, the taxpayer, from union members and contribute them to the union. It's like having a free bookkeeping service that sends you a check every month. It doesn't cost you a dime. It's just an annuity. The right to work laws have been cast in many different ways, mostly with aspersion, mostly by the left and by unions. I'm going to boil this down just as simply as it can be. There are nuances here and there, depending upon the state, etc. But bottom line is, the right to work law has as its primary and singular key ingredient the fact that employees, the workers, the worker bees, no longer have to agree to the government taking their money out automatically without their say or without their approval every month and giving it to the union. And what we're finding around the country is that where the right to work law has been put into place, those states are doing far better than the states. I mean, far, far, far better than the states who still have or still do not have right to work. And union membership is dropping like a stone because most people are only members of a union so they can have that job, also part of right to work. And this will be, I hope, and a lot of economists who are way smarter than this hayseed think, a huge offset to all the other darker and more detrimental forces coming up in the economy. One would hope. I hope that explained right to work in the simplest terms. Anybody who tells you that it eliminates the worker's right to join a union and eliminates the right to collective bargaining and eliminates the right to organize, it's all BS. Basically, it eliminates the union's right to force extraction of money from an employer through a governmental entity at a taxpayer's expense. That's what it does. All right. I'm going to finish up with immigration, because immigration is a lethal threat to our republic, a lethal threat to conservative governance of any type, and in fact, a lethal threat to the sanctity of one person, one vote, which is the cornerstone of our republic. There's a pretty tough, strong, courageous United States District Court judge down there in Texas. His name is Hannon. And he kind of blew, he threw a torpedo through Barack Obama's executive order on immigration several weeks ago. Basically, he blocked it. Can't go forward. The Republicans, who, by the way, were stupid enough to send a letter to Iran, not that I don't agree with the letter, not that in my heart of hearts I don't like the fact they sent a slap to the Ayatollah, but it was stupid. Their time would have been way better spent filing a lawsuit and asking for a TRO, a temporary injunction, against Barack Obama and John Kerry trying to engineer any deal without congressional authority. That would have shut it down. But I digress. Hannon said, shut this baby down. The government went in and said, no, we need a stay from your restraining order because we got all these poor people waiting in line. Never mind the poor people waiting in line for years legitimately. And we just can't wait to give them their tax refunds for taxes they never paid and to enroll them in Social Security that they've never contributed to. And we just, you know, think of all the poor people. Well, not only did the judge so far, and I certainly hope he doesn't, grant their stay of his own restraining order, but he noticed in the court documents that they were talking about as a reason to lift the stay that 100,000 people have already been given work permits, absolutely against the law, against the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, far beyond the scope of the executive authority of the president, which he has formally acknowledged. And not only did he not give them their stay, he ordered them to show cause why he should not hold them in contempt for trying to sneak through 100,000 people before he announced his order. It's going to be really interesting. And this is a huge case, folks. This is really a big deal. Really big deal. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't have any faith in Congress making the right decisions, carrying through on the right actions, or having the cojones to stand up and do what needs to be done for the good of the country. That's not to say the whole Congress. I think there's many people up there, Tom Cotton, even though I don't agree with them all the time, the gentleman from Texas. I'm having a brain fart here. I can't remember his name. Unbelievable. The bottom line is while there's good people up there, the bottom line is not enough of them. They can't carry the day on anything. John Boehner, I don't know where he's at. McConnell, I don't know where he's at. And I'm not sure that what they want to see done, particularly given what seems to be some type of influence the Obama White House has over them. I don't know where they stand on these issues. They've told us one thing and they do another. They have a chance to defund the monies to do this illegal immigration thing, and instead they say, oh, the court ruled, so we don't have to do that anymore. Wrong. Keep your eye on this court case. I'll keep my eye on it for you. So those are my thoughts for Saturday, March 14th, 2015. It's a lot to digest. And it's things behind the scenes, which I think now that you know, you can think about, and you can look at the news that you're seeing in a whole different light, which is exactly what we need. Information is the first line of defense. Pass this show on. Don't be bashful. Send it out to your mailing list. If you got some libs on there, fine. They don't have to listen. Pass it out. And by the way, if you get a chance, like us on Facebook, on the Right Side Radio. The more people we reach, the better. The more people you reach, the better. You owe it to you, you owe it to your kids, you owe it to your country. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.